Welcome to Life and Sirens, Behind and On the Scene, a podcast by first responders. We're your hosts, Sophie,
Jamie,
and Aubrey.
Trauma bonding. But I think that when, especially when you run like adjacent with other agencies, like the fire guys, when you go on like a hard call together and you interact in a way, that starts to build trust. So they start to see your face when you show up on a call and they're like, okay, good, that crew's going to do what I need them to do. Or vice versa, like we show up and we see their faces and we're like, oh, thank God. Like I know that they're going to help me with exactly what I need. And you start to build that trust. And then they see something that they were unaware that your character was capable of. And they start to build respect for you. And so now you have trust and respect. And then that leads to building a friendship.
Yes.
Because now we have all these things. And so now when something's hard, they're going to check in with you. You're going to check in with them. And if you can build that in interagency response, then like building that with your own crews is
and I think
super beneficial.
One thing I see often is that we look at friendships in professional environments and say that's not okay. And I don't get that. And it's really, like, if you really think about it, I mean, it's not an outright thing that they're like, you can't be friends, but think about our group. We became friends, we started doing things outside of work, which was absolutely so impactful for our careers and our lives and our health. But, like, so many people think that's inappropriate.
Which really is wild. Like, think about the, okay, so, like, the critical incident debriefings and stuff like that we've all gone to.
Rough.
Right? But think about how you hear a lot of our co-responders. They'll be like, well, I just don't talk to anyone about it. Mm-hmm. Because my wife is a middle school teacher. And I have three kids. And I don't want to, like, traumatize my family. And
that's
my,
fair.
Like, all of these things. My friends are all civilians. And you talk about all that. And I can empathize with you. But, like, I don't understand that because not one of my friends doesn't do this job.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Like, everybody has this job. And a lot of us do it together. And so there is no, like, I can't tell you what I just dealt with because I'm going to traumatize you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there is a fine line between, I guess, expressing our traumas and sorrows and traumatizing the people around us. And I think it's a little bit harder to do when we see it all the time. Like, anything is shocking when you've only seen it once or you've never seen it. So, like, I understand that, but, like, there's not a lot that could shock us. So, I do think it's important to build your tribe and to have people inside of work and outside of work who you can confide in. It's just, I don't see another healthier way.
Mm-mm.
I don't either. I think that we were talking a little while ago about how 24s or so, working 24-hour shifts are so impactful in this career, and I think it's exactly for that reason. And that's why we're all so defensive about working 24s, because you do get this cohabitation and this family atmosphere, and you are literally joined at the hip with your partner for 24 hours. You have to do everything together. And I know that I've said it before, and we've had this discussion a lot of times. I don't give a flying hoot where I'm working, what truck I'm on. I don't care if it's the rig that has ever wheeled its way into this county. I don't care as long as I trust the person that I'm working with.
Yes.
Because that makes all the difference.
And that can make a shift so much more exhausting when you're with somebody that you have to, like, babysit, essentially. They're just, like, and you don't know what they're going to do next. When you develop relationships and trust, whether it's through seeing hard things or hiking outside of work, going on a backpacking trip, whatever it is, I think that you just trust those people so much. Like, you would have to do a lot of convincing for me to, like, not. Obviously, if you tell me to do something wild, I'm going to be like, we are not doing that. Not you're not doing it. We are not doing that.
Especially with my propensity to join cults.
Exactly.
So I appreciate that.
Exactly. But speaking of cults, we spend so much time together, which truly, I've been so upset about people. Like, people call us a cult sometimes, our friend group, because we work together. We enjoy a lot of our time outside of work together. and we go on trips and things like that.
And we stay relatively excited about our job.
Yes, and we're very eager.
It makes them feel like we're weird.
Yeah, which, why is that weird? Make EMS cool again, okay?
Yeah.
Gosh, just for real. Like, I've had to literally talk to my therapist about this and been like, am I in an unhealthy relationship with my coworkers? Turns out my therapist says no. And obviously he can only understand the things about me that I provide to him, but I feel like I'm pretty real with him, and like, he thinks that it's healthy, so I'm gonna go with that. And I truly don't see another way.
Mm-mm.
I don't see another way of like how you cope, and this life is, or this career is very impactful and very traumatic.
Right, like you talked about 24s and how we're all super protective of them.
And, oh yeah, I'm not going anywhere else.
Right, there's a lot of discussion around 24s about like, are they safe and are they good for your mental health, and like 12s mean you get more rest and all of these things. And I think that there's some validity there, you know, in certain places. But then I think about what 24s actually do for my mental health. And one aspect is, okay, so I don't get to sleep a full 8 hours every night. That's not great, but okay. But then the other aspect is that I'm surrounded by 5 people that I trust more than anyone in this world. And that wouldn't have been built if every night at 7 p.m. we were just like, all right, deuces. Because yeah, that really just shuts down. It really boxes it into like just a working, like a coworker relationship. And so I think when I weigh the mental health side of what 24s have given me with like the camaraderie and the family aspect, it far outweighs some of the negative side effects of that schedule.
Yeah.
Far outweighs. And now we're on 24/72s, so the rest aspect has really kind of been taken care of. But when you go on things that like human beings should never see, and you see them with the people that you trust more than anything in this world.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes it bearable. It makes it something that you truly can like work through and function through.
I completely agree. I think there's some things we just can't recover from on our own, even if we are, you know, putting in time in therapy and things like that. And there is nothing comparable to seeing it and being with those people during it. Like, I know every call that's ever traumatized me, and I know which calls I wasn't with you guys, because they still hurt more than the other ones.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that it's comforting to know that we're all hurting together, but maybe it's just a little less heavy.
Emotions demand to be felt, and I think that they are felt louder with people that you know.
Yeah, you're comfortable to show your feelings, mm-hmm. and you're not worried about the judgment, I think, for mm-hmm. sure. Because I've definitely been on calls with, especially when I was a new medic, everything was going crazy. But with people I didn't even know, like this was the first time I'd ever met them, and the energy by everyone on those really high intensity calls, it's just outrageous. And like, when you can't, I don't know, when you just can't fully feel that, and it's just all trapped inside of you because you don't even know this person, I just don't love that. And so I love that at our service we get to bid our shift, partner, and station.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that is something that our service does that is so, it's meaningful, and I think that it speaks a lot that they recognize how important that is to the people on the truck. Because if the person that you're sitting beside didn't matter, then we would all switch partners every day.
Yeah.
It would be whoever can fill in the schedule the easiest and whoever's the cheapest. But that's not the real world. That's not how this works. And that's not how this career was founded.
Well, and I think it even promotes, you know, the exceptionalism in patient care. When you know and can anticipate your partner's next move, you know how they operate.
Oh, yeah.
You know the things that they might forget about and things like that. You just form for sure. such a strong team.
And we call it flow.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You're like, oh, we have a flow.
Yep.
Like, we tell students all the time, like, oh, I'm sorry that we, like, didn't talk to you on this call, or we forgot to let you do this thing. Like, just let us know, because we will get into a flow.
Yeah.
And we'll just not speak to each other and just do what we do. And I feel like that's a hard thing. I also think that it's like, not everybody has to want this.
Right.
Like, some people just want to go to work and they don't want it to be a family. Yes. And they just want to then go home and like keep it all separate. And if that's you, and if that's what you're comfortable doing,
that's okay.
Then that's okay. My brain just would hate that.
Yeah. And I think that it's important to know that as humans, a lot of our needs are similar, but how those needs and those cups that represent those needs are filled look differently for every mm-hmm. person. We just happen to have a group of people that our needs are met very similarly, and that means quality time and passion and excitement and nature and mental health and all those things, mm-hmm. and we're really lucky for that. But I also want to mention, just because your process and your needs don't look like ours doesn't mean ours are wrong.
Yeah, agreed. And vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean yours are wrong either.
No.
We were talking earlier about like doing things inside and outside of work, and we all enjoy backpacking, which is something that we do together. Watching you guys do some of the hardest things that I've ever done, and like doing them together out in the wilderness.
True team building for
right?
that.
Like, it was just, I have seen you guys do really hard things, and to be able to witness that in like regular life and see it in somewhere that's a little bit different than work. Yeah. And then to go to work and be like, oh, this is a hard thing. I have no doubt that you'll handle it. Because we did a every man for themselves backpacking trip where, like, don't get rhabdo and die.
Yeah.
You know?
But he did get rhabdo. He just
he
didn't
did.
Die.
He just didn't die.
He just didn't die, thank God.
But, like, to see everybody be resilient and be able to take care of themselves while also taking care of each other, like, it just is such a good bond, and it builds yeah. something that you really can't replace.
And this is a concept that transcends this career. My uncle, he retired as a detective from the police department, and I was talking with him not too long ago, and I was telling him about, you know, just my career and my partner and everything, and he told me that his very first partner that he ever had, because they used to ride doubles back in the day, you know?
So
his,
cool.
I know. His very first partner that he ever had was also named Jamie. And yep. he
what
I know isn't that
that's
cute,
cute. Yes know.
And he was it just brought a smile to his face because he was so happy. He knew what that meant. He knew what it meant to have a good partner and somebody that you can trust, and that was cool because it transcends this career. But I also joke and say that if you're ever trying to vet somebody, be partners with them for a month, because a month into being partners with Jamie, I already knew how she reacted under incredibly high stress situations. I knew what she looked like when she was the saddest that she's ever been. I knew how she reacted when there was a gun pointing at her head. I knew all of these things, and I only knew her for a month, and I already got to see all of her emotions at extremes. And I think that this career and having a partnership gives you a very rare window yeah. into a person that you wouldn't ever normally be able to see. And I think that is incredible.
For sure.
I think when you're faced with extreme danger or high stakes, when you have to worry about someone or be concerned for their safety or your safety or the team's safety, things like that really bring people together because it lets your brain realize how much you love them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because if this goes wrong right now, then that's it.
Right. Like you're not worried that they're going to push you down.
Right.
And be like, you slow, bye.
Yeah.
Right.
We're both running out of this together or something. We're pushing our orange button.
Our orange button. Sorry, dispatch.
When you guys were in medic school, did you get the talk that was like, your family is the most important thing and do not let school destroy your family, and if it gets too stressful on your right. marriage and all of this stuff, like, do not let it ruin those things for you?
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that was the strangest conversation, because
they were like, you're going to get divorced.
Yes. And
it was weird. I was like, what?
Right. And the thing is that in my brain, this is not necessarily like the right perspective, but I was like, man, if your marriage cannot survive 1 year of stress, 1 year of like yeah. extreme separation and stress and like high stakes,
that was it.
Then probably shouldn't at all anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's probably a good thing.
Right.
And everybody that was in my medic class that did get divorced is the best thing that they could have done.
Yeah. That happened in our class too.
Yeah. They're all like, way happier now.
Thank you.
And so I'm like, they used to give us that was like, if this is hard and your spouse is losing their mind,
just
you
quit.
Know, just quit. And I was like, what? No. No, if your marriage can't survive stress like medic school that you know is only going to last 1 year.
Yeah, that's all you got to deal with.
What are you doing? Like, it just blew my mind. I said, this is seems like the wrong advice.
Well, and you know what this reminds me of? Actually, last night I was looking at Facebook pictures and I saw Austin and Nicole and their kiddos at a Preds game. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that man is enjoying his life now. Mm-hmm. But he worked really, really hard for a lot of years so that this life would be possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like we always say, anything worth doing is hard work. And that man put in some hard work.
Hard work.
Undoubtedly, Nicole did as well. But like,
oh, for sure.
I mean, I'm just so proud. Like, when you do hard things together, it's so much easier to enjoy the little happy things or the big happy things. Like, life just is sweeter.
Right. And watching the two of them, when clearly, like, when our relationship with Austin really, like, first started, Nicole was in nursing school.
Yeah.
And so, like, watching him support her through nursing school and putting in, like, hella overtime.
Hundreds of hours of overtime.
And all of this stuff to, like, make sure that his family was squared away and to support her through nursing school.
Yes.
But then, like, she also supported him through medic school.
Yeah.
And then, so she did medic school, and then he supports her through nursing school. And then after she finished nursing school, now he's going back and finishing his degree. So, like, they really just go back and forth of, like, lifting supporting the other one up and being like, okay, like, I'm good now. I got it now. Now you go do what you need to do.
And they both just got new cars.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just, like, I'm glowing. And I think that, like, we've talked about is, like, when you get to spend that much time in the trenches and the hardships of life with people, it is so exciting and, like, exhilarating to celebrate all the happy.
Right.
Like, it makes it so much bigger and better.
Yes.
And, like, you feel all the bad things, but, like, you, man, you feel the good things.
Mm-hmm. Right? To see him pull up in a new truck.
Oh my gosh, I know. Mm-hmm. He's so proud
like,
of it.
I almost cried.
I was like, this is not happening because if anybody knows the Austin vehicle saga, he has been neglecting his needs, desires, and wants for the betterment of himself and his family. And I just like, it was good feeling. That's a good man right there.
When we finally saw that new truck, I was like, you deserve it so much. And then to see Nicole come in the new car and all the kids be like, look what we have.
Yes.
And it was just so cool because those are two people that we have watched that did not have like an easy road.
No, not from the beginning.
No. And we've watched them just like really work their ass off to build something that they were proud of and to build something that they were proud to give their kids. And like, man, it's been a cool thing to witness. And through so much hardship and difficulties and fights and like literally all of it, we have been sitting in the passenger seat.
Literally.
Literally in the passenger seat.
Literally.
I have been yelled at by Nicole in a matter in the kindest probable way.
Oh, samesies.
But.
Right? But, like, it is, at this point, it is, like, because we're family.
We are family.
Now. Like, it is, it's so normal.
Yeah.
And it's just a really cool moment to be like, I love this family. Like, they are mine.
Yes, they are mine.
And when they succeed, I'm like, and when something's bad, I'm like, what do you need?
Yes.
Like,
I have called Austin many a times, too, in the middle of the night and be like, help.
Help.
Like, and that's another thing is, like, all of our family dynamics, like, our blood family dynamics are different. But this family that we have been able to build together, like, I call any of you, like, the things we've done for each other, I mean, like, I just can't imagine my family being able to do that for me. Like, and I think it takes the perspective of, like, seeing what we've seen and doing what we've done and, like, being in the trenches together to be like, I will do anything for these people. They've done it. They would do anything for me, even if, like, we don't expect things in return. We just know, like, life's hard right now. Let's lift Aubrey up. Let's lift Sophie up. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I love that.
But it does. And it extends, like, it extends to our shift and our service. Like, there's this feeling that, like, if you wear our county's name and you call me and you're like, hey, I need something. Like, what do you need? I got you. Or, like, hey, I have a question.
Yeah.
Like, I have this patient. I don't know what to do. Like, I'll answer the phone. Mm-hmm. I got it. I got you. And I think
and
that
there's a sense of pride in it. They're
for
like,
sure.
Oh. And I think all of us need to be reminded of that sometimes. If someone is calling you for help, like, that just is, like, I'm so happy and honored. I'm honored that you asked me for help. Actually, Nicole, the other day, she brought up she was helping a family process some death and dying. She's an ER nurse. And one of the family members was having a hard time letting the other family members in because he was worried that their needs weren't going to get taken care of. And she said something along the lines to him of, like, this is going to fill their cup, and it would be an honor to be here for you right now. And I think that's something that I've experienced in this group. Like, it is an honor. Like, I am honored that any of you would ever ask me for help. That's an honor.
Yeah, and the opposite of that is I am going to be mad at you if you don't.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why? I don't know if it was a podcast or a TikTok or a TED Talk or something. But this guy was basically talking about, like, friendships and not wanting to be a burden and, like, all of the things. And he said that his friend told him, he said, how dare you take that from me? Like, how dare you take away the opportunity for me to help you?
For me to love you.
Because for me to show up for you and to do something that you need me to do, or just to sit there with you or whatever it is, that makes me feel useful and good. And, like, I am putting good things into the world.
Yeah.
It is just as self-driven as it is others-driven. And so when I heard him say that, like, how dare you take that away, the opportunity for me to help you?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, like, yeah. That actually tracks.
I think all of us have been able to get a little better at letting mm-hmm. each other help each other.
Yeah.
And that is a very important thing to learn in life, because you can't carry it all by yourself. You yeah. can't, or you will break. And that has happened
mm-hmm, to all of us.
Yes.
And my fear is I'm like, oh man, if I ask for help, then they're going to be like, you can't handle it. You can't do it. You're yeah. weak. All of those things. But never one time, if someone has asked me for help, have I been like, well, ew. I guess you're just useless.
Yeah. You little baby.
Yeah. I've always been like, oh yeah, absolutely. I would also want help.
Yes. And sometimes there's just nothing to do to help, but to be there for someone. So, like, let them love you. I tell this to my husband a lot, because he's not really in a place as far as being able to ask for help, even though he knows he needs it sometimes. Let people love you. Sometimes almost all the time, that's what it looks like, being able to be there for you. Mm-hmm. Just let people love you.
Yeah, let somebody just sit with you yeah. or just, you know, whatever it is. There's, oh gosh, what is it? There is a word in another language, and this is a horrible story because I can't remember what the word is or the language.
Or the language.
I think I know what you're talking about.
But it literally just
is it
means
African?
Yes, it means like to sit together and do nothing.
Oh no, this isn't the one. One thing that I like is it's called Ubuntu, and I think it represents our group very well. And it's I am because we are.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I am because of who we are is what it is.
That's really
I am
cool.
who I am because of who we are.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And very true.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. that, I think we all kind of found ourselves together because we gave each other the space to do it.
Yeah. I don't know. Somebody needs to do a study on us. We're very healthy. I don't know. I know a lot of people probably don't think that because we do spend so much time together and we do so much. I think we have the outcomes to prove it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so too.
We have encountered mental health crises, addiction, sobriety, like all of these things, and we are wildly successful outside of who we are at work.
For sure. And I think that the times that we have been the most disastrous or, you know, felt like we failed or whatever it was, or in the most danger, risk, or whatever it was, are the times that we did not practice what we preach and we shut everybody out.
Yep. Absolutely, it is 100% true.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot disagree more. Or I cannot agree more.
Yeah.
Cannot disagree more.
I would argue, like, vulnerability is a tough thing.
Yeah.
And I think especially when we are in our job, it's really hard to be vulnerable because you're afraid that people aren't going to trust you if you, like, talk about what you struggle with. But the thing about that is that it's not weak. It's actually the opposite.
Yeah.
Because it is ridiculously hard to be a vulnerable person.
It's very brave to be able to ask for help.
Right? So, like, just kind of, like, toss that around with yourself if that's something that, like, you struggle with is vulnerability.
Or even being able to, like, stand up for yourself mm-hmm. to other people. Not even a way of, like, asking for help, but sometimes you just have to do something that's hard many times, just like this job, before it's not as hard or it's not as painful or it's mm-hmm. not as scary. So just practice. It's hard.
Stop telling everyone you're fine. I feel like the biggest disservice that you can do to yourself and the people in your life that love you is to pretend like nothing's wrong.
Yeah.
Because
they know, and then they're like, well, something's wrong, and they're like, I'm fine. You're like, well, what the heck? Like, did I do something wrong? Because they are clearly not okay.
Right, and the vibes are off. Why are the vibes off?
And
right?
I think all of us have gotten a lot better at communicating with each other of, like, when we're not feeling okay. Or even if, like, if you can communicate that before shit hits the fan, that's good too, because then we can all be like, okay, well, you know, Jamie said she needs a minute, so she's not having a great day, like, let's give her a minute, and then we're able to shower you with love in the way that you need it.
For sure.
And that is very important to lasting relationships.
Yeah. And when people ask you, like, hey, are you okay? It's okay if your answer is like, no, but I don't know why.
Or no, but I don't want to talk about it right now. Yeah. I'm not ready.
Yeah, I haven't worked it all out in my head yet. Because the problem with saying that you're fine or nothing's wrong or whatever it is that essentially you're telling that person that their intuition is wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're gaslighting them.
Yeah, and so then they start to question themselves, too. So, like, you don't want them to question if they can actually read you because they're someone that you love and you care about. So you want them to get better at reading you, not worse. And so by telling them, no, I'm fine, you've misread this situation, they start to try to adjust their ability to tell what is going on with you.
Yes. And
so it can actually be more detrimental than you even think it is.
I think that, yeah, that's like the number one reason like relationships of any kind fail. Mm-hmm. You just don't know what someone's emotional status is.
Yeah, you're constantly like, well, I thought I knew, but I don't. Or the vibes feel off, but they keep telling me they're not.
What does Ollie always say? Never assume anyone's emotional status.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
That is true. Don't assume it, but don't leave someone to have to wonder.
Yep.
Please express your feelings, even if someone's bothering you. Like, I mean, like, we spend a lot of time together, and just because you have an off day with your partner or they're doing something that annoys you, they might not even realize they're doing it. So maybe you should tell them.
Yep. And we, if anybody listening to this is neurotypical, I am so sorry.
Do those people exist?
I don't know.
Not in this field.
But the vibes are off really may not translate with you.
Yeah.
But it is like a change in the air.
Absolutely it
is. The air is heavier or more staticky or like there's more electricity in it. Like it just there.
That actually, thank you for being able to like
articulate
quantify
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is like different feelings where you're like, oh, there's different things in here. Like the atoms are moving differently.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you can tell.
Your auras.
And it's every time that I talk about it, I'm like, I swear I'm not like really that hippy dippy, but it's just
real.
A thing.
But I think even if you are maybe more towards the neurotypical side of the spectrum, I think that is something you develop in this career field. It's like you just know when something's off. So like, don't bullshit your partner.
Yeah.
Whether it's your life partner, your friends, or your work partner, they just know. I just think they just know. Mm-hmm. Especially when you spend that much time with somebody.
Right. You know what I've started to have to do instead of saying, like, no, 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 I'm okay. Like, everything's okay. It mostly happens with Haley because I will get frustrated.
Haley is pretty neuronormative.
She is. I will get frustrated about something she is currently doing or asking me to also do. And I will be pretty clearly be frustrated. And then she'll be like, hey, I can tell you're getting frustrated. Like, what? Why? And I'm like, no, no, it's fine. What I want to say is I'm actually embarrassed that I'm frustrated with you right now.
Yeah.
That's what I mean, is that I know that there's really no reason for me to be angry or frustrated with you. So I'm embarrassed that I am. So I'm trying to pretend it's not happening, but it clearly is happening. That's what I mean when I'm like, no, no, it's okay. And I've had to start to do that. Because I'm like, you're right, I am, but I'm honestly kind of embarrassed that I am because I don't think that it's founded.
Well, I think that our feelings are always founded. What's not okay is taking them out on other people or making people hurt because of them. I also think that because of societal norms and how culture is, I think we can all get really defensive or scared or stressed or angry when people tell us that something we're doing is impacting them negatively. But if you just keep doing that and we keep doing that with each other, it becomes very normal and it's less painful and less scary and easier to process, I guess, and easier to fix. And you're like, oh, okay, well, that's bothering them. Like, some things we can't, like, But that goes for the same thing as, like, I do not like when people say, well, she's just a bad. No, No, she's not able to communicate effectively.
Yeah.
People are not just bad people, I think, in that way. Like, I don't mean like some people, like, okay, we're not talking about like Ted Bundy or whatever, but I mean like most people just have communication deficits.
Yeah. A lot of people are not the culmination of like the worst things I've ever done.
Yeah.
I had to learn that a comment on my actions is not necessarily a comment on my character.
Yes, I do like when you say that.
Yeah, because like that, they're tied together for me and they have been for years.
Yeah, because
and
that's so, normal.
Yeah, if anyone was like, you did this and it hurt me, I would immediately be like, I'm a good person.
I didn't say you weren't. I just said, right? Like, you are chewing yeah. too loudly.
Right, and that's not what I say to them, but when I get really defensive yeah. and I put armor on and my walls are up and I'm like yelling back.
We can't grow that way.
Yeah. And what I'm saying is, no, I'm a good person. I think you're wrong. But what they were saying is, hey, you did something that I think is probably out of character, which is why I'm telling you that it hurt my feelings. And so I've had to work really actively hard on being less defensive and be like, just because you're commenting on my action doesn't necessarily mean you're commenting on my character.
Well, and some people will just say things to be hurtful because they're hurtful or they're, insecure. But the people that we love and that love us are only saying things so that we can all get better. And that's a big part of leadership, too. And I think that a lot of the times, especially in EMS, we become leaders before we're emotionally mature enough to be leaders. I don't even think you need a leadership lesson. I just think you need to be able to listen, take information that people are giving you, constructive criticism, and say, okay, I can be better. That's for sure. A big emotional maturity development.
Yeah, emotional intelligence is, like, key to leadership.
Yeah.
If you cannot say, hello, self, how am I feeling today? Then, like, how do you expect to help people? Like, it would just be so hard.
It is hard because you can't even regulate your own emotions.
Yeah.
And you have to manage a million other people's. That is, right? You're not prepared.
I really think that this would be the most useful tool ever for EMS. but I was listening to a TED Talk. It's called Huberman Labs. And he had a guest speaker on who was basically talking about, like, feelings. And they put them in elementary school. They put this program in elementary schools. Where these kids, every day they come in at, like, the start of the day, lunch, and then before they go home, they basically do a feelings check. And they're like, yo, how are you feeling, buddy? With these, like, little nuggets.
Before they go home?
Yeah, but in the morning, in the afternoon, and before they go home.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so they do, like, three check-ins a day. And they all they have to do is tell you a color. So they're taught that, like, all your feelings, and they can learn as many words as they want to, and they're kind of all live in this, like, hue, right? So and it's a energy versus positivity axis. So it's your X and your Y axis, energy and positivity. And so if you're red, you are high energy, low positivity. If you're yellow, you're high energy, high positivity. If you're green, you're low energy, high positivity. And then if you're blue, you're low energy, low positivity.
Aww.
Right?
And so can we do this at work?
Yeah. So you can think of, even if you're like, I can't nail down frustrated, I can't nail down melancholy, I can't nail down annoyed. But what I can nail down is right now I have low energy and low positivity. So I am for sure blue. Or like I am just pumped and I am yellow all the way today. Most of the time my personality lives in green.
Yeah.
I have like a relatively high positivity. I'd say like a medium positivity and a low energy. Like most of the time I kind of live in a contentment phase. And that's like being content and just stable and happy and like really just feeling like grounded in where you are.
Okay.
Because the extremes should be probably not your constant. Rare. Right?
Hopefully. That's sounds exhausting.
It's hard to refill that, but ideally we want to live in like a green state. And one of like the best stories that he tells on this podcast is like this little dude, he was like 5 years old and something happened in the morning and he was just like ticked off and they did their feelings check and the little dude was like, I'm red right now, I'm mad. He was like, okay, all right, we're red. And he asked him, he didn't say, do you want me to fix it? Do you want me to whatever? They always say like, do you want some skills to work on that? Would you like to go over some strategies to help change your color? And little dude said, nope. I want no strategies from you, sir.
And I just like, want to be mad.
Yeah, he said, can I ask you why? And he said, because it will change. Because it's going to change. Like at 5 years old, he could recognize that this feeling.
That's emotional intelligence for sure.
Yes, he could recognize that this feeling was going to be fleeting, that it eventually would change and that it was not permanent. And he would not be mad forever. And to learn that at 5 years old really, for me, reinforced that you have to teach emotional intelligence.
Right.
You have to, it is innate for some people, but rarely. Mm-hmm. And like, you really have to learn it and teach it. And so like, little dude at 5 years old was like, yeah, I'm mad now, but I'm not going to be mad later.
Yeah.
So like, I'm good.
Chill.
Right. And to be able to say like, tomorrow, if it doesn't change tomorrow, I'll need a strategy.
Yeah.
But today I'm going to let it ride.
And I think that's important, to sit with your feelings.
Yeah. It was pretty nifty.
That's makes, I don't even know this kid. And I'm like, I'm so proud.
Right?
I love that. I think that's a very useful tool. And it may seem very elementary. Obviously, it's used in elementary school. But, mm-hmm. like, sometimes we just need, when we're learning anything new, we need a more, you know, basic understanding or representation of what those emotions mean or look like. And I think that's a really good one.
Especially in a world that, like, a world like EMS that is so, like,
yeah.
go. Like, how many times, Obs, have you and I been in the middle of, like, a pretty serious conversation? And our tones drop.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we're immediately like, switch flipped.
That's mm-hmm. a great point.
It would be so useful to be able to be like, hey, I noticed something's off. Are you good? And me be like, yeah, I'm red right now.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, check, tones drop. We go on this call. Like, we know where each other stand.
Or even like, if you just like, say you live with somebody that has a really hard time being able to verbalize that, especially when they are one of those extremes, they could just like, put a little dot on the chart, on the fridge, and you'd be like, oh, well. Houston's red right now. Probably leave him in his room.
Probably leave him be.
You know what I mean? Like, I think that's a useful tool.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a tool without... I feel like it's not fearful because you're not sticking to one very specific word.
Right.
You're just like, it's a general vibe.
Yeah.
Which is a hard thing for us to do, especially when we're learning emotional intelligence. So don't ever feel like you're like, oh, I can't think of the words from... It's okay. Sometimes, even if we are extremely emotionally immature, sometimes we just don't have the words. So I think having something like that is takes the pressure off, mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool.
I like it.
I know. I was listening to it. I was like, oh my God. This is great.